Kids Church today, age 3 through grade 4. Is that accurate? Did I say that right? If you go ahead and go to Kids Church now, we'll miss you. Unless you're going to be loud, then we won't miss you, obviously. That'd be distracting. Yep. Be good and have fun. If you can't do both, just have fun, right? Well, I want to start off today by saying that I am not Pastor Phil. Some of you are confused. I know that he's ruggedly handsome like me, obviously. The way around, of course. But I want to say that so that you know that we are not the same type of preachers. So that if you have it in your mind that I'm going to do everything exactly the same as him, I'm not. So I want you guys to get your mind in the set that I'm a younger version of an older man, because he's old, okay? Younger version, upgraded version, maybe, okay? Anyways, for those of you who are maybe newer here, Pastor Phil is my father, and I'm Pastor Jacob. I don't even like saying that, that's weird to say, Pastor Jacob, but that's me. I'm going to be giving your lesson today. And I'm excited you guys are here for our Next Gen Sunday. I know we've talked about it a lot, but this is where our students kind of take over. And you've seen it already where we're kind of pushing some of our students to do things that maybe they're not super comfortable doing, get a little nervous while we're doing, especially if they're on stage. Maybe you didn't see it from some of the greeters out there. I know some of them are nervous. But do encourage our students because we are pushing them to be better. We're growing them in areas that they can grow in. So definitely don't just think, wow, they're the worst. But you're going, hey, way to go. I noticed you, because that's important in our students to be noticed. But today we are going to talk about Jonah. So we're going to talk about how to not get eaten by a whale. I mean, not literally, because that would be, I don't know, not very beneficial for life. I mean, if you were around a whale, probably not ever. But I kind of have a, how well do you know the Jonah story? Okay, so I got three questions for you on the slideshow here. Let's see how well your knowledge is. So, how well do you know the story of Jonah? Which city was Jonah called to? Was it Nineveh, Tarshish, or Joppa? It wasn't Joppa? Okay. The answer is... There's another slide. Yeah, Nineveh. Yay! Why? Way to go if you knew it. Did it? Raise your hand. How many of you knew that one? That Nineveh? Okay, that's probably the easiest question on this questionnaire here. Next question we have is, which nation did the city of Nineveh belong to? The Sumerian nation, the Assyrian nation, or the Babylonian nation? Not really sure. It is. Okay. What is the right answer? The Assyrian nation. Okay. This is actually some background to the story of Jonah. The Assyrians, in the time of Jonah, is like the greatest enemy of Israel at this time. Like, they're big and bad, bigger than the Babylonians at the time. And actually, 30 years after Jonah's story, they pretty much conquer Israel. So, just to give you background, that Assyria is a big deal, and Jonah's going to be talking to Nineveh, like is the capital city of Assyria. Okay, next question. Was Jonah swallowed by a whale or a great fish? What is the answer? Yes is the answer. Yes. What, they are the same thing. I looked it up. I thought I was going to be all tricksy and be like, no, it wasn't a whale or no. But it means the exact same thing. I mean, it doesn't matter. Whale, great fish, whatever. We don't even know what it was, really. Something like that. But yes is the answer to that. So you know. So today we're going to talk about Jonah. And in the book of Jonah, it's not very long. It's one of the minor prophets here in the book. And there's only 48 verses total in the whole book of Jonah. And five of those verses are dedicated to probably one of the greatest revivals in the book, well, the book of the Bible. Now, there's lots of revivals in there, but this is one of the biggest ones by, like, population size. 120,000 people get saved by Jonah's actions, even though he kind of is an idiot through the whole thing. So five verses are dedicated to that. 43 of the 48 verses are dedicated to the disobedient servant of Jonah. And this shows God's emphasis on the individual and growing the individual, not on just his mission and his goal. His goal is to get you to get where he wants you to be, and then his mission will be accomplished. 43 verses to Jonah and 5 to the revival. God is interested in who we are, not just where we are. Often we ask, what do you want me to be? You know, where do you want me to go? But God says this, is that this is who I want you to be, which is more important than where I want you to go. I want you to be this, and then we can move forward from there, and you can start accomplishing what it is that I'm calling you to be. Okay, so God's primary issue is with your character for your mission. I'll talk a little bit about that as we go through this. And I do have kind of one main point, but there are several nuggets that you might gather from this, this lesson here that I'm speaking about. And there's plenty of slides and lots of notes you can be taking. So don't just be looking for the one. You're like, oh, I wrote it down, got it. There'll be several you can acknowledge here. So in the book of Jonah, there's four chapters, and we're going to start chapter by chapter in chapter one, because that's the beginning, one, okay? Reading in from Jonah, you don't have to stand. I'm going to be reading through lots of different things. My Bible version is the NLT, which may be different than yours. I find this one easier to understand for me and the students, so this is the version I like to use, NLT. Starting in verse 1 through verse 2, says, "The Lord gave this message to Jonah, son of Amittai. Get up and go to the great city of Nineveh. Announce my judgment against it, because I have seen how wicked its people are." Okay? In verse 2, it says, "Get up and go to the great city of Nineveh. Announce my judgment, because I've seen how terrible they are." There's a progression here. Get up, go, speak. Mine says announce, but speak, same thing. And this is the heart of ministry, of what God is calling us to do. He says, get up, follow what I'm telling you to do, and do that. Or you hear God and do what God says. Maybe that's easier. Hearing God, do what he says. Hearing from him and then responding to him. And this is the heart of ministry. And when I say ministry, some of you are like, well, I'm not a minister. I can't be in ministry. But no, if you are a Christian, you have a ministry somewhere in your life where you are, whatever you do. Maybe you run a daycare. Maybe you're an accountant. I don't know. Whatever you do, you have a ministry where God has called you to be, and he wants you to be listening to him and then doing what he says. You don't have to just be some guy up here standing on stage talking to you, or a kids' church pastor, or whatever. You are all servants of God. You are all followers of Jesus, I would assume, unless you're confused, which we can figure that out today. But verse 3 says, "But Jonah got up and went in the opposite direction to get away from the Lord. He went down to the port of Joppa, where he found a ship leaving for Tarshish. He bought a ticket and went on board, hoping to escape from the Lord by sailing to Tarshish." So this is where Jonah is like, no, I'm not going to do that. But it's important to note that Jonah heard God. Okay, he heard him, and he understood God, which is the first part of the get up and go, is that he heard God. He got it. But he said, no, I'm not going to do that. That seems like a terrible idea to me. And at the end of chapter 4, I'll explain why he's thinking that, because maybe you don't really get it, because Jonah is one of these prophets. He's one of the people that's supposed to be, like, leading other people to God, and he's instead running away from God. And I will explain why he's doing that. And when it says, in my version, that he went in the opposite direction to get away from the Lord, it literally means he fled, to, like, bolt like a horse. Like, he was out of there. Like, nope, I'm out. See you later. So Jonah was partially obedient, because he heard God, which is the first step. Heard him, understood him, way to go, you were listening. But then he did not do what he said. And partial obedience is still disobedience. That's very important to note, because you can hear God and not do what he says. Or rather, you could read the Bible and not do anything it says. You could come to church and hear and never do anything that God is telling you to do, and you're still a disobedient servant. Very important to note, partial obedience is not full obedience, which is what God calls us to be, obedient servants. Okay? And it says that he went down to the port of Joppa, where he found a ship leaving for Tarshish. Okay, so maybe he's thinking, oh, it's God's will. There's a ship right here for me. Oh, man, this is what God really wants me to do. This ship, man, this is where I need to be. Okay? This is it for me. And it's amazing how we can take circumstances and twist them to say something totally different than what God has for us. So something else pops up, and we're like, oh, that must be what he's talking about, even though it totally contradicts what he said in the first place. Okay? And ultimately, he paid the price for it. It says he bought a ticket and went on board. So he literally paid extra money and whatever else to get away from the Lord's plan. Literally paid the price for his disobedience. And verse 4 says, but the Lord hurled a powerful wind over the sea, causing a violent storm that threatened to break the ship apart. Fearing for their lives, the desperate sailors shouted to their gods for help and threw the cargo overboard to lighten the ship. But all this time, Jonah was sound asleep down in the hold. So the captain went down after him. How can you sleep at a time like this? He shouted. Get up and pray to your God. Maybe he will pay attention to us and spare our lives. Okay, so you have the storm. This is, I'm sure you guys remember this in the story. The big storm comes and all people are freaking out. Like, what's going on, okay? God has a way of getting you to a place where he wants you to be at. And in this case, it was a storm. To get Jonah to realize this is not where I want you to be. He actually does this lots of different ways. He gets Jonah into a place, I want you to be here. I want you to be here. I want you to be here, not there. And he has a way of getting you, whatever you need, he has a way of finding out what you need and getting you to where he wants you to be. Okay? And the book of Jonah could have ended in verse 4. It just says, but the Lord hurled a powerful wind over the sea and the ship sank. End of story. Yay, Jonah. Don't disobey God because he'll kill you, okay? And often we say that, if you don't obey God, God will just use someone else. No, he'll find someone to do his calling, which is true. I mean, but he doesn't just give up on us. He keeps coming back, I mean, there's some situations where he'll say, okay, you're too busy to find someone who's available. But usually he's like, I want you to be how I want you to be. I'm going to get you to where I want you, and then I'll use you for my calling. If it takes a long time, that's okay. I'm a patient God. I got this all figured out. You're not patient, obviously. Okay? So in the story, the sailors, they shout to all their gods. They start throwing cargo overboard, trying to save the ship. And the whole time, Jonah's asleep, like some kind of idiot. And he's just like, oh, no big deal. I'm just running away from God, and our ship's about to break. Let me just take a nap. And the captain comes down there and even tells him, he's like, what is wrong with you? How are you sleeping at a time like this? And then he tells him, why don't you pray to your God and hopefully we'll get saved? And what a shame it is that this captain, a pagan, says, why don't you pray to save us? And what a shame that what it would be for this prophet, this man of God, to not even be thinking about praying or doing anything, but someone who has no idea who Jesus, God, anything is, says, maybe you should pray. That might help us. Maybe, man of God, you, servant. Oh, you're not? Oh, you're running away from God? Oh, great. Maybe you should pray, you idiot. What's wrong with you? My gods aren't working. They're not even real. Come on, Jonah. Get in gear. And in verse 7, they throw some lots and try to figure out whose fault it is, and apparently they say, well, it's Jonah's fault. And then verse 8 through 9, which is super funny. Okay, so it says, why has this awful storm come down on us? They demanded, who are you? What is your line of work? What country are you from? What is your nationality? Okay, so they're freaking out. They're like, what? Where are you? We need help. What's going on? We're going to die. Tell us other things about you. And Jonah just doesn't even answer any of their questions. He's just like, well, I'm a Hebrew, I think, and I worship the Lord, my God, sometimes, except when I'm running from him. And he made the land and the sea, so he's powerful. He's probably causing this storm, actually. But no big deal. I mean, no worries. It's only my God doing all this. And verse 10 says, the sailors were terrified when they heard this, for he had already told them he was running away from the Lord. I mean, he's bragging beforehand, saying, hey guys, I'm running away from my God because I'm better than him. I know better than him. I'm running away. So they know he ran away. There's a storm. His God is Lord over the land and the sea. So they're like, Jonah, oh my, come on, bro. Okay, Jonah, you're so stupid, Jonah. So they ask him, okay, so this is your fault. This is your God. What do we do? What do we do? How can we do this? So he says, well, throw me over. That's probably a solution. Just kill me. not even worth living anymore. Just throw me into the water. No big deal. Just chuck me into the water. Well, that might fix it. Maybe. We'll find out. And the people, these are actually some good sailors. They're like, oh, no, we're not going to do that right anyway. Let's try to row faster and throw more things overboard. Let's throw all the cows and kittens because we don't like cats here overboard. Whatever else is on the ship. Okay. They save all the dogs, of course, because dogs are good. Cats. Demon spawn. Okay. A little bit inside. I don't really like cats very much here. And I'm very nice. Okay. Dogs love people. Okay. But, okay, so the sailors, they don't do it right away, but then eventually they say, okay, verse 14, they cried out to the Lord, Jonah's God. O Lord, they pleaded, don't make us die for this man's sin, and don't hold us responsible for his death. O Lord, you have sent this storm upon him for your own good reasons. Then the sailors picked Jonah up and threw him into the raging sea, and the storm stopped at once. And then verse 16 says, the sailors were awestruck by the Lord's great power, and they offered him a sacrifice and vowed to serve him. So the sailors are saved, and they follow after God. So the disobedience of Jonah, him running away, him being asleep, all these things still brought about the salvation of these sailors. So God will use you even in your own disobedience. He has something for you, even if you're going to not do the right thing. He'll figure something out so that you can see, hey, even though you're not obeying me, I can still work through you. But I have a bigger plan for you, okay? So maybe there's 10 sailors in this boat. So he saved 10 people. But he was called to save 120,000 people. So he saved 10 in his disobedience, but he can save 120,000 in his obedience. And Jonah's a prophet. Jonah knows the right things to do. He knows the Bible that he had at that time. He knows God. He is God's mouthpiece to the people. He's with God. He knows all this stuff. So don't just think that believing the right things or having great biblical knowledge is somehow enough. We need to be people who are obedient to God. And you might be thinking now, oh, well, he saved 10 people. That was right. So actually, he saved 120,010 people. So it's actually better. You know, you should be disobedient first and then be obedient to God. That's a bad idea, for one, okay? But God has called you to a greater purpose. And really, to Jonah, he called him to a greater purpose. 120,000. And he saved 10. And in this story, it could have ended here. And God could have said, well, you missed it. You only saved 10. That's a bummer. I had a greater plan for you, and you didn't follow it because you thought you had the right way. You thought you knew what was going on. And in verse 17, we get where we see the great fish. Now, the Lord had arranged for a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish for 3 days and three nights. I like that picture because there's a fire inside the... That's probably not physically possible. But, so he's in the fish, okay? And then we get to chapter 2. This is where Jonah starts to pray, eventually. Okay? This is probably the most shocking part of this whole story that we probably don't even realize. He's in the fish, the whale, the whatever, for 3 whole days and 3 whole nights. What the heck? I mean, oh my gosh. Can you even imagine being inside of an animal, like, eaten? That doesn't even make sense, okay? So it took him 3 whole days. 3 whole days before he prayed. Holy stubbornness. Holy stubbornness. Oh my goodness. I mean, he's like, this is, I'm right. I'm right, you're wrong, God. I'm right, you're wrong, God. I mean, what is he doing in the way? I mean, oh my goodness, okay? So he went through the whole process of being swallowed and residing. I mean, swallowed in itself. That just sounds not fun. And the residing in this belly of this whale, not fun either, okay? Oh, extreme stubbornness. Okay, just how ridiculous this is. A whale, okay, we assume he's just eaten by a normal whale. Okay, whatever, we'll just assume that. A normal whale can eat up to 8,000 pounds of food a day. Okay? Which is equivalent to about 40 million krill, which are these little worm, gross, nasty, ugly looking things. Okay? So he's inside of the whale. The stomach. I don't know where else he would have gone. Okay? He's in the stomach. All of this is coming inside with him throughout the 3 days. Oh my gosh. Okay? I cannot explain to you how ridiculous this is that he didn't pray on the first day. Or the second day. Took him 3 days. Extreme, extreme, extreme stubbornness. Man. I just want to tell you that we all have a great capacity to be stubborn. Is that I will not do this. I will not go. You can't make me. I dare you to make me, God. You can't make me do it. I'm eating these krill, God. No big deal. You know? Whatever. You should look up krill. They're like nasty-looking worm things. They're gross. Now, I have an illustration here. And I told this person that I was going to illustrate them today. I don't see them in here. Someone's going to have to go find them for me. I need Zoe. Wherever Zoe is. There's Zoe! Okay. Zoe's going to come right over here on stage, because I told her I was going to embarrass her because she was stubborn. She was stubborn. We have a staff meeting every third Sunday, and she's one of our student leaders, so way to go, Zoe, for being a student leader, okay? And I got some of this. We had some food. We got some chicken and whatever other things, and we got this pistachio, like, fluff salad thing. Does anyone know what this stuff is? Anyone? This is very a Midwestern thing. I love it. I know it's good, okay? So I gave some to her and said, you should try this. No, that's not happening. She says, I only try one food a year, and I already tried broccoli, like, in January, so I can't do it. Nope, not doing it. So I said, okay, listen, just try it. I know it's good. I mean, there's no real purpose for me trying to get it. Just, I wanted her to try this food, okay? I said, if you don't, I'm going to put you on stage and make you an illustration for my story. Because you want to try my pistachio fluff. So you can go sit down now. Yeah, way to go. My embarrassment for you. But it just goes to show that we can be stubborn about stupid stuff. I mean, stuff that doesn't really matter. But we all can be stubborn, just like Jonah. Pretty extremely stubborn. And when God is met with stubbornness, he deals with stubbornness. I mean, he handles it right then and there. He doesn't wait. He doesn't say, oh, maybe he'll get better. Maybe. No, he's like, we're going to smash this out of you. And whatever it's going to take, I'm going to deal with your stubbornness, okay? And sometimes it takes an extreme situation, as in Jonah's case, swallowed by a whale, okay? He was stubborn from the very beginning because he says, I'm not going to go where you want me to go. And then there's a storm. And then there's a whale. He's inside the whale. And God knows this is what it's going to take. You're going to have to be around all that krill all day. And sometimes it takes an extreme situation to get us to pray and obey God. I mean, what do you do while you're in the fish's belly? Okay, this is from The Wild Things, where the wild things are. It's very dark because it's like super dark at this time. But if you haven't seen it, there's a part where these giant people-eating monsters actually puts the kid, I don't remember what his name is, Max, in his belly to, like, protect him from another person coming after him. Okay, whatever. But it's like, this movie freaks me out, for one. Because there's, like, giant people-eating monsters. They're just gross, okay? You should watch it, maybe, or not. But this is what I imagine being inside of a whale is like. Just, like, darkness. There's only light on his face because we have to see his face in the movie. But it's just dark and slimy and gross. And that's the extreme situation that Jonah was in. In it. I mean, there's no light, and it's dark, and he's full of slimy, nasty worms and other things, okay? That's the extreme situation God was willing to put Jonah through to get him to pray to him. Now, his prayer is a prayer with the wrong motivation. He doesn't even really admit that he did anything wrong. If you read it, he never says, I'm sorry, God. I'm going to follow you now. I did the wrong thing. And it's not even about God's glory or his holiness or the heart of God, any of that. Jonah just didn't like his circumstances anymore. He's like, I'm tired of being in this fish. Why don't you let me go now? And it's so self-centered. Jonah mentions himself 17 times and God 5 times in this prayer. So self-centered. I mean, I cried out, I called, I sank, I was buried, I said, I will, me, oh, God, you're in there too, oh, yeah, and then me, okay? It's all about himself. I don't like where I'm at, God. Why did you put me here? He even says that in verse 4 of chapter 2. It says, then I said to the Lord, you have driven me from your presence. Oh, he's so blinded. So blinded by his stubbornness. He's saying, God, you put me here. I mean, he's blaming God. I mean, whose fault was it really? It was Jonah's fault. But he's saying, you put me here, God. Why did you do this? You put me here. And however, even though he's so self-centered, all about himself, God hears Jonah's prayer. God doesn't give up. And there it is again. He didn't give up on him there. He could just let him die in the whale. Oh, goodbye. Sorry. Funny eating krill all the day. Until you die. But he didn't give up on him. He heard him, even though it was all about himself. He was just saying, I'm going to get you to where I want you to be. I want you to look at me and pray to me. Even though his prayer was totally jacked up, okay? Totally not right. God still heard it. And in verse 10, it says, and the Lord ordered the fish to spit Jonah out onto the beach. And I say this prayer is terrible, but in verse 7, he kind of starts yielding to God, letting him know that, I remembered you, Lord. I remember where I've been. He doesn't really admit he's wrong. He just says, okay, God, I'll do what you want me to do, I guess. Then we get to chapter 3, which is basically starting over, all over again. Starting over, all over again. Same thing. Then the Lord spoke to Jonah a second time. Get up and go to the great city of Nineveh and deliver the message I have given you. Get up, go and speak what I tell you. Same as the beginning. Hearing what God says and doing what God says. So if God puts his finger on something he wants to resolve and it doesn't get resolved, he doesn't forget about it. You may go round and round and round and round and round and round and round again. You could keep disobeying, keep doing the wrong thing, but he'll just back in the same place or a similar place where God will get you to a place, okay, let's talk about this. Well, we'll get you to a place where you're ready for me. Because I'm ready for you, God says. I'm ready. I've been ready. But God's preparing him to get into a place where he needs to be. So then verse 3 says, this time Jonah obeyed the Lord's command, finally, and went to Nineveh, a city so large that it took 3 days to see it all. On the day Jonah entered the city, he shouted to the crowds, 40 days from now, Nineveh will be destroyed. Yay! What a message. How exciting. Man, I'd love to be there. Oh, man. So insightful, Jonah. I'm just going to turn to the Lord right now. Yay! Okay? And when it says, in verse 4, he shouted to the crowds. It's the same word that God used before in his command to him. It says, get up and go and deliver the message I have given you. And in verse 1 of chapter 1, get up and go and announce. Those are all the same exact words in the Hebrew. The original language is just a different translation here to help you understand it. But it's all the exact same words God is using. So this is the first time that Jonah is doing exactly what God is telling him to do. Pretty much the only time, actually. But this is the first time he's doing, this is it. I'm going to follow God's word exactly the way he asked me to do it. Now this command, preaching, whatever you want to call it, is only 8 words in English. 40 days from now, Nineveh will be destroyed. Okay, 8 words. In the original Hebrew, it was only 5 words long. Man, he's long-winded. He might have had to catch his breath through the second word there. It's so long. So, you went to preaching school, okay, let's say Jonah went to preaching school, okay, and you submitted this as like an assignment. like the preaching like class, okay, or whatever, the speaking class. And he turned this in. I mean, it's only 8 words long. I mean, it would, probably wouldn't do very well. I mean, it doesn't even mention God. And it doesn't even mention what you're supposed to do. It doesn't even tell them, Nineveh, do this. It just says, you're going to get destroyed. Good luck. There you go. It doesn't mention salvation, which is like key. It doesn't mention any of that. Yet these are the exact words that God had commanded him to say. This is it. He didn't command him to say anything else, because it says that that's the exact same word. He said exactly what God wanted him to say. And through those 8-5 words, it led to arguably the biggest revival in all of the Bible. 8 words. 5 words. The city of Nineveh believed God. And that's what the rest of chapter 3 talks about. Because he preached simply what God had given him to say. And I asked this person if I could use her as an illustration, but Lisa Hoffman is probably one of the best, most personable, most talkative people I know. She's probably friends with every single one of you in this church. I mean, unless you're like brand new, she's probably friends with you, because she's an all-star at that. She cares about everyone and shows it, because she's into being personable. And that's not me. But I feel like I'm supposed to be just like Lisa. Because when we have our staff meetings, and she's part of our staff, because she does all the money so we can live, because she's awesome. We have our staff meetings, and she often would come with stories about how people in her job would be talking to her, and then they'd be talking about God stuff, and then they'd come to church because she's there in their life, and she's encouraging them and doing all these things for them. And I'm like, man, I'm not friends with anybody I work with. I'm not doing any of these things. I'm not like that. Man, I guess God can't use me. I just want to tell you that God did not call you to be someone else. Because in this story, Jonah uses 8 words. And I often feel like I need to be doing something totally different than what God has made me to be. I feel like I need to be more involved with everybody's lives. And there's probably some truth to that. I mean, God calls us to be love to all the people around us. Plus some growth I have. But he doesn't say, listen, just be Lisa. Just be her. Okay? Because I can't. There's no way. I mean, I'm a boy, for one. Okay? It's not possible. But Lisa's got it down. I mean, she's got it down. So God did not call you to be someone else. God called you to be you. God called you to say what you're going to say. Called you to do what you do well. Because I'm not a personal person. He did not call me to that. He didn't even call me to be a senior pastor. He called me to be a youth pastor, because that's what I do well. That's what I do. So where has God called you to be, you know? Where are you at? Where is your job? And it doesn't have to be long and lengthy, whatever. You know, it's only 8 words for Jonah. I feel like that's how it works when we pray, too. Oh, I got to pray about 100 words before God hears me. But, you know, a good prayer to say is, God, help me. And he hears it. You don't have to try to be so fancy with God. So chapter 5, or verse 5 and verse chapter 3. So Nineveh heard the message. Everyone fasted. And even the king ordered it, said, if you don't do this, you're going to die. Or something like that, okay? And then in verse 10 of chapter 3, when God saw what they had done and how they had put a stop to their evil ways, he changed his mind and did not carry out the destruction he had threatened. So through Jonah's 8 words, God saved the whole country. 120,000 people. Because he finally obeyed. Now this is fun. No one knows. God of the Ninevites. Anybody have a gander? Who's the God of the Ninevites? You don't have to know the name. I don't know his name either. But the God that they had at that time was a fish god. Which is ironic. Because, you know, Jonah came from, literally after he was spit out, walked to Nineveh. So he probably stinks like a fish already. Okay? And then he proclaims what God has to say to them. Right from a fish. And it's amazing that God knows exactly how to reach people with his word and truth. Because these people worship a fish god. Jonah comes from a giant fish. And then says what God has for him to say. But God knows exactly what people need. So when I was saying the thing about where are you? Where do you work? God knows exactly what they need, and you are it, most likely. It's just a matter of the simplicity of ministry. Get up, go, speak. Hear God, do what he says. God's put you somewhere. Obviously, I don't know, but you know where you're at. Hear God, do what he says. And then if this was like a Hollywood movie, this would probably be the end of the movie. It's like, yay, they got saved! Yay, congratulations, happy endings, because that's what we like to see. You ever watch a movie where it's like not happy and you're like confused? Like, what? Oh, man. What's that? Ex Machina. Oh, my gosh. Have you guys seen that movie? Oh, man. It makes me angry thinking about it because it's like this machine that, like, is a human and, like, manipulates people into making them like them, something like that. And at the end of the movie, it just goes not okay, okay? It's not okay. I don't like it, and it's supposed to be happy. And, like, I thought the machine and the human were gonna, like, be cool and, like, be friends, but no, she, like, runs away from him and, like, locks him up. And, and that's literally the end of the movie. It's, like, not happy at all. Not okay. But in this one, obviously it's happy. If this was a movie, it would be a happy ending. And it could end right here. But it's not, because God is not done with Jonah. Not done with him yet. Because he's still a little brat in this story here. He's a little upset about this. So chapter 4, verse 1 says, "This change of plans greatly upset Jonah, and he became very angry." What a whiner. Oh my gosh. What a baby. I mean, this word, greatly, in here, I mean, Jonah was so angry at the actions of God. It literally means it spoiled his day. Ruined his day. My day is just trash now. You saved all these people. Oh, man, this is the worst. Anyone have a thing where something happens and it just ruins your whole day? I mean, or maybe the opposite of that, something happens and you're like, wow, my whole day is better now because, I don't know, someone gave me a flower. Just imagine something. Okay? But this is exactly what it is for Jonah. It's just his day is ruined. Man, God, you saved people. This is the worst. I mean, what an idiot. Okay, verse 2. So he complained to the Lord about it. First mistake. Didn't I say before I left home that you would do this, Lord? That is why I ran away to Tarshish. I knew that you were a merciful and compassionate God, slow to get angry and filled with unfailing love. You were eager to turn back from destroying people. He says, I knew you would do this, God. I knew you were going to save these people. That's why I ran away in the first place. I didn't want to save these people. And he's just complaining that he didn't get his way. And the reason why he does this, okay, Nineveh is, I think, is the capital city of Assyria, okay? Jonah is in the people of God, Israel. Assyria is the greatest enemy of the Israelites at that time. Greatest enemy at that moment in time. So he's like, this is my enemy here. I don't want to save these people. These are my enemy. And if you look through in the Bible that 30 years later, I said this, that 30 years later, Assyria actually comes back and conquers Israel. Conquers. look at it also, because Jonah obeyed, God was going to destroy them right then and there. He's just going to destroy these people that really God didn't need to care about, because it wasn't his people. God has like his people in the Old Testament, the people of Israel, and he kind of is focused on them. And he could have just continued focusing on them, but he's like, I'm going to save these people because they're my creation. And they end up surviving another 150 years. And eventually they do get destroyed because they turn back to their old ways and all that stuff. But 150 years saved because of Jonah's actions. But this is why Jonah says, this is a bad idea, God. I'm not going to do this. And then in verse 3, just kill me now, Lord. I'd rather be dead than alive if what I predicted will not happen. He says, just kill me now, God. It's not worth it for me to live if Nineveh gets to live. They're our enemy. If they get to live, I might as well die because they're going to come kill us anyways or something. I don't know what he's thinking, okay? And it's important to note that God doesn't just fry him right there. He's like, okay, requested, you're dead. Great. Just kill me now? No problem. I got lightning powers or whatever else. You're dead. Crush him with a cow. I don't know. Okay? He doesn't say, you can be an example to everyone in the Bible for the rest of eternity of what not to do. Don't tell God to kill me, you know, or something. I don't know. But it's important. God doesn't give up on Jonah. He could have. And then God asks in verse 4, the Lord replied, is it right for you to be angry about this? And in verse 5, it says, then Jonah went out to the east side of the city and made a shelter to sit under as he waited to see what would happen to the city. And the Lord God arranged for a leafy plant to grow there, and soon it spread out broad leaves over Jonah's head, standing or shading him from the sun. This eased his discomfort, and Jonah was very grateful for the plant. But God also arranged for a worm. The next morning at dawn, the worm ate through the stem of the plant so that it withered away. And as the sun grew hot, God arranged for a scorching east wind to blow on Jonah. The sun beat down on his head until he grew faint and wished to die. Death is certainly better than living like this, he exclaimed. So God asked, is it right for you to be angry about this? Verse 5. Jonah doesn't even respond. There's no words there. He just leaves. Says he goes out to the east side of the city and just sits and waits and says, well, let's see what happens to the city now. I mean, he pouts away like a little child. Doesn't he respond to God's question? Just, he's out. I'm out of here, God. I'm upset with you. Pouts like a child. And we're encouraged to be childlike, not childish. Jonah's being childish. And really, he's being a whiner, a little whiner baby, because he didn't get his way. He thought he had a better plan. Obviously, God did have a better plan. So he's whining. And then God prepared four things for Jonah. The first thing was the great fish, the whale. He prepared that. He even says it, wherever that's at. It says that, in my version, that God arranged the great whale to swallow Jonah. Prepared. Arranged, prepared, same word. God prepared the great fish. And then he prepares three more things. And all of these things are for the teaching of the prophet Jonah. These things are not meant for punishment. You might think that, oh, he got swallowed by a whale, so he punished. You ran away from me? I'm going to punish you now. But not really. I'm sure there was some of that in God's eyes. I mean, if I was God, that would be part of my thing. Like, oh, whale. But it's not. It's really for teaching of the prophet, for him to get to a place of understanding where God wants him to be. It's all to prepare his heart. Not to just punish him. Because there's a time for God to punish people. But more often, there's a time for God to prepare you to understand. This is the way it is. So God arranges, God prepares a plant. This plant gave Jonah's shade. So it's some giant plant. I don't know, giant leaves, okay? Like an elephant tree. I don't think those have like those giant leaves on them. Some sort of plant. And this is the first time in the story that Jonah is glad. I mean, he's happy. Oh, my plant. I'm going to name him Ted. I'm going to cuddle with him. Ted the plant. Man, I love love this Ted guy. He's green. I'm not. Oh, yay. Okay. So his day is made. His day is made because of this plant, basically, is what it's saying here. So he had a bad day because Nineveh was saved, but his day was made because of a plant named Ted. Okay? So you can just start to see how skewed his really his understanding is. To help you understand why God is putting him through all of this at all. It's because he doesn't get it. He does not understand where God wants him to really be. He obeyed God, but he didn't want to. He obeyed God just because he's like, okay, fine. I don't want to be in this whale anymore. Get me out of here. I'll obey you. He doesn't understand. God's going to help him. So God arranged for a worm, and this worm ate the plant, because that's what worms do. They eat things. And he put the worm in the plant, so he's got to eat the plant. The plant dies. Goodbye, plant. Goodbye, Ted. So sad. In verse 8, God arranges for a hot wind to blow on Jonah. So it's a wind, and it's just hot sun at the same time. So it's a hot wind coming at him. And because he doesn't have shade anymore, he's just miserable, you know. Oh, poor Jonah. Miserable. So he wishes to die again. Says, death is certainly better than living like this under the hot sun without Ted. God. Come on. And then verse 9, God repeats his question. Is it right for you to be angry because of this plant diet? So first question is it right for you to be angry because of Nineveh? Second question is it right for you to be angry because the plant died? And Jonah answers, he says, yes! Yes, it was. I love that plant. Me and Ted, we were best friends, okay? Don't you understand, God? Don't you get it? I love that plant. He says, I'm even angry enough to die. I love that plant. Duh. Come on. Jonah just doesn't understand. So God now explains. He's illustrated to him. He's shown him with signs, done things to him. He still doesn't understand. So God is going to, I'm going to explain it now. He says, in paraphrase, or not paraphrase, he says, you feel sorry about the plant, yet you did nothing to put it there. It came and died quickly. Jonah had no investment in the plant. He did nothing to bring that plant there. Yet it brought him pleasure. It made his day. Okay? Jonah was pleased with it. Happy. Yet he did nothing, absolutely zero, to make that plant there. I mean, that's a miracle in itself that a plant just grows huge and gives him shade. Did nothing. And God says, if you can be so concerned about something you did nothing for and have no connection to personally at all, why are you angry at me when I am concerned about a nation of people that I created, that I love, that has 120,000 children in it, and a bunch of cows? It says that. It says, and not to mention all the animals in the story. He's telling him, don't you get it? I created these people. It matters not to me that they are not part of the Israel family. I created them. I'm going to save them. Don't you get it, Jonah? It's important to know that God has the first word and the last word. And that's the way it always will be, usually. I don't even have good examples of how it couldn't be, but that's just how it is. So we've been talking about revival. God's going to do for us. And Jonah was used to make a revival happen. Yet he was angry because it was for his enemy. That's why he was angry, because it wasn't for people he liked. And he didn't understand God's heart and vision. So we are expecting God's revival here at Boone Open Bible and in Iowa and all around the world. We're expecting that from God. That's what we're proclaiming. Not aware of that, maybe you should be listening. And I say to you, don't be so blind and arrogant to think that God will make this revival happen in a cookie-cutter way. In the way that it's always been done. Because some of you have been around when the previous revivals have happened in other places, like Azusa Street, and other revivals that have happened, literally happened. You can look it up. So I want us to not be so blind to think it has to happen the way it happened before. The way he's always done it. I say to you, let God use you to make a revival happen. Get up, go, speak. Hear God, do what God says. Revival won't happen without you. It's everything that Pastor Phil has been talking about. How to prepare yourself to make what God happen. It's all about you. I mean, that's kind of selfish in the mind, but God wants to work on you, because without you, he's not going to make it happen, because that's always how he goes. He always uses a person to make it happen. He always goes through his vessels to make his mission happen. And if you aren't prepared, if you aren't listening, if you aren't ready, it won't happen. You know, if we have a prayer night and nothing happens, maybe you weren't listening. Or maybe more likely, God's doing something in a different way than you expect. But God, I pray, you will soften our hearts and open our ears, open our minds, open our hearts for what you are speaking to us. Get us in the Word, Lord God, where you are. Get us, put us in a place where you are, so that we can be ready, hearing for you. Because God, we know that you have a great plan for us in our city, in our nation, in our world. But you want to use us. Preparing us every day. And I just pray that we'd be on the same page as you, God. Like we'd be there with you, ready to go. I'm listening. And obviously, God, we're going to make mistakes. And it's so good to hear that you're not going to just give up on us. And I pray that, God, when we do make mistakes or we don't do exactly what you say to do, I pray that you give us new strength and new energy to just do what it is that you really want us to do. Grow where you need us to grow. And God, I just pray that your will would be done. What you want to happen would be done today in our lives, every day in our lives, and in this church,